Glory to Jesus Christ. So as you heard, Father Miron asked me to offer a few reflections of my visit and pilgrimage to Romania. And so I'd like to share with you some of the observations, some of the historical background, identify what that means for us today, and then give you some conclusions as the end. So on my last trip to Romania, which was in May of this year, it was my last full day. I was in Bucharest, and I had this incredible fortune to meet Father Ciprian Gradinaru. He is a disciple of Elder Cleopa. Now, who's Elder Cleopa? They asked me the same thing in Barberton, and Father Miron mentions him a lot. He's a great holy father, but who he is, he died in 1998. He's considered the most representative elder and spiritual father of contemporary Romanian Orthodoxy, and he is anticipated to be made a saint in 2025. So he is a very, very holy man. And here I had the opportunity to meet one of his disciples. Now, Patriarch Daniel has asked this Father Ciprian to come to Bucharest like once a month from the monastery, and people will stand in line, this is not a joke, 12 to 15 hours to confess to him or to have his spiritual guidance. And I had this chance to meet, I was lucky. I was in the right place at the right time and had a fast-talking translator. Very lucky. But this man was the holiest man, holiest monk I've ever met. He was so peaceful, so serene. He's this classic monk with the silver gray beard. He held my hand in his left and my translator's hand in the right. And he had this incredible gaze of serenity. Soft-spoken, peaceful. I mean, to me, it was like meeting Christ himself. And I can only imagine that's how Jesus himself looked. And he spoke to me softly, and he knew me without knowing me. We read in the tradition of these monks that are clairvoyant, that just know, and he did. So one of the things he said to me was that Romania is a very holy place. And I agree with that. I'm going to share why in a few moments. Then he asked me some of the questions he asked me. He said, have you ever read The Russian Pilgrim, which is how the Pilgrim's Tale is translated directly from Romanian into English? And I said, yes. And he took my prayer rope into his hand and started praying a few of the beads. And he says, prayer is so important, and the Jesus prayer is the most beautiful. He continued to pray on the beads for a few moments, and he blessed my translator and I, and we were finished. We had about 20 minutes with him. This is truly one of those holy fathers we read about in the Philokalic tradition. Amazing man. I'll never forget that experience with him. So I first visited Romania in end of August and beginning of September 2021. I had a list of churches and monasteries that I wanted to see. I had no idea what to expect, and I was in awe with what I observed. And what was that? Churches were full. And I'm not talking about just an older crowd. We're talking about young families with children, full. And monasteries were full with pilgrims and young people, and the reverence for the icons was just amazing. The monasteries are growing. There's over 150 monasteries in Romania, and with the add all the hermitages, it's over 500. And many of these monastics are very, very young. Yes, you have the older spiritual fathers like Father Ciprian, but it is just amazing. And so I was told by a woman in Houston, you've got to meet Father David. He's Father David Roshka. He's another one of these holy fathers. He was at a hermitage in Vakova de Jos, which is very close to the Ukrainian border in Bukovina. And I waited over 5 hours to meet with this man because everybody in front of me was a young family with children, every one of them. I was like the old guy in the crowd. And we read in the tradition about people waiting a day or two in the 19th century at the Optina Monastery in Russia to wait for the spiritual father. And I remember reading that and saying, yeah, that's pious thinking. Who's going to wait 5 hours or 15 hours to talk to the Starets? It's true. They do. It's amazing. Another story I want to tell you is in Bucharest itself, there's a well-known monastery, Radu Voda. And every Wednesday and Friday at 7 p.m., they have a healing service. And I arrived early that day on the Wednesday. I just had arrived in Bucharest from driving through the country, and I came back. And I got there early, so I was able to venerate the relics of St. Nectarius of Echina, who the Romanians just love this saint. And as I was there, the church began to fill up, and there's no pews, so I'm in the back in a choir stall because I struggle standing 3 and 4 hours. And people stand 4 and 5 hours for these services, by the way, or sit on the floor, whatever, but it's amazing how they are there and just back and stay. And so the church slowly fills up, and before it's all done, the church is full, and there's this big line to venerate the relics, and I'm in awe. But I'm tired, so I figure I'm going to leave just a little bit early. There were over 300 to 500 people in line to venerate the relics. The courtyard was 2x full from the church. People were there. And there was nothing special about this Wednesday. It was not a feast, nothing. This happens every Wednesday and Friday, a healing service. Now, many of us have never experienced a healing service in our tradition, so I want to explain what it is. There are 7 sets of readings. It's a Vesper service with 7 sets of readings. Epistles, and the deacons are all incensing the people. I mean, there's crowds. And there are 7 Gospels, all on healing of stories of Jesus, both physical and spiritual healing. Remember, he's the healer, the physician of souls and bodies. And then at the end, everybody's anointed with holy oil. Amazing service, and you have this many people there. I went to another one too, it was equally full. Now consider what I just explained in Romania and think about our churches in the U.S. And you would even see in Western Europe, because my parents are German, it's far emptier than here. So what is going on in Romania that their churches are full and ours are not? I had to know more. So I started reading, and when I did the research and I did the homework, I felt I had to go back, and that's why I'm back again this May. Now, let me just say, on my first trip, I'd read a number of the Romanian fathers, like Elder Cleopa Siastria and Arsenio Papakosiak, to name a few. My thesis was based, for my master's degree, was based on the theology of Dumitru Stanilaui. He's a Romanian priest and arguably the best theologian of the 20th century. Yet nothing prepared me for the holiness that I observed in the people there and this devotion. So when I came back from the first trip, I found a book on St. Vladimir Seminary Press about Patriarch Daniel entitled Rebuilding Orthodoxy in Romania. That title alone and the description on the back cover piqued my interest. And given the cooling of faith that we're experiencing, all I could think of is, could this book give us perspectives? So I was drawn, I read the book. Father Mirren's read the book, he quotes from it. And let me put this in the context. The Romanian Orthodox Church, believe it or not, is the second largest Orthodox Church. Russia's the biggest. The Greek Church is actually smaller than Romania. Many of you also know historically that Romania had one of the most brutal communist dictatorships ever in Nicolae Ceausescu. And they were under that repressive regime until December 1998. So as Father Cyprian said to me, and he wrote in a book, communism destroyed a few hundred thousand people physically, but spiritually destroyed millions. So this is the background that you have, that, you know, and Patriarch Daniel was not the patriarch when the communists came out. He was elected in 2007. In fact, he just celebrated last week his 15th year of enthronement as patriarch, and last month his 35th anniversary of his tonsure as a monk under Elder Cleopa. He was a doctoral student, by the way, under Dumitru Stanilaui. So he's this very interesting, very articulate in theology and a very solid spiritually. And he said, to rebuild the church in Romania, yes, we have to put more physical buildings up, but that's not the most important thing. He said, we need to rebuild the faith inside the people. We need to grow their interior lives. That was his priority. And he's focused on three primary areas: liturgy and the sacramental life of the church, the prayer, particularly the Jesus prayer, because Romania had a strong hesychastic tradition, and three, philokalic and patristic renewal of the church, returning to the fathers. First on that list, the divine liturgy is the center of Orthodox spiritual life, and it's intended to be a dynamic encounter combining both heaven and earth in worship of the triune God. He considers it the summation of our total belief, the high point being the Eucharist. It's intended to be dramatic, deeply moving, and a spiritual action. And as Patriarch Daniel wrote, the divine liturgy constitutes the most profound vision of God as a mystery of love and communion. After the revolution in 1998 that overthrew the communist government, one of the priorities of the Orthodox Church was to get a priest into every single parish in that country, even the remotest parishes, so that people could have liturgy again, to encounter Christ in Eucharist. That became a priority to them. Availability of liturgy. Second, in terms of prayer, Patriarch Daniel wrote, the first and ultimate source of love, of true joy and true peace, is prayer. He writes, nothing in this world can replace prayer. Therefore, prayer's communion with God is the life of the Christian soul. He also wrote, true theology is always born out of the life of the church that prays, confesses, and served. Whereas the liturgy is our communal worship, prayer is our individual drawing to God and strengthening our communal bonds by strengthening our own faith life. What's amazing to me is what happened when they came out of the pandemic. So in January of this year, Patriarch Daniel declared, because we're coming out of pandemic and the churches have been closed, he declared 2022 as a solemn year of prayer and appointed three hesychast saints as the patron saints of Romania for this year. Favorite fathers of us all, St. Simeon, new theologian, St. Gregory Palamas, and St. Paisios Velichkovsky. Think about that. That's the message for his people. We need to go back to prayer. And so we printed up our own cards, and they're impressed with this, that we're doing the same thing. We need this year of prayer. We all do. It's not just the Romanians. Now the third, this patristic and philokalic renewal, I think this is very important. So the two words are sort of overlapping, so I want to clarify what they mean. Patristic means the early part of the church, from basically 100 to 800, the church fathers, like St. Basil the Great, St. John Chrysostom, one of my most beloved saints too, people like that, St. Gregory the Theologian. They are early fathers of the church, whereas in the Philokalia, there are certain fathers that were tied to the hesychast tradition, and they often quote many of the patristic fathers. Sometimes there's a little bit of an overlap, but just to know what we mean by those two. So it's really back to the basics, back to the early fathers. So you have the people, the holy fathers, and there's another one, like Isaac the Syrian, St. Isaac the Syrian, Father Marin, speak of him a lot. He's another one of our favorites. He's not a philokalic father, but all the philokalic fathers quote him. He's like the most important saint to them in many respects. Or St. John Climacus, if you're following the book study from Father David Abernathy. They're not philokalic fathers, but they're quoted by the philokalic fathers. But there's like 24, 25 fathers in this tradition. And then they spawned other fathers. And so like St. Ignatius Brancheninov, St. Theophon the Recluse, ones that are quoted regularly, they're like great-grandchildren already of the spiritual renewal. So the idea of the philokalic renewal is not just returning the fathers to the fathers of the church, but as Patriarch Daniel said, gaining a deeper grasp of their spirit. It's intended to be a renewal of the spiritual tradition. The tradition, it's our tradition. It's not just theirs, it's the Eastern tradition, and just regaining what we already had. And the fathers give us the wisdom because they live the gospel of Jesus Christ. They show us ascetical practices and how they dealt with temptation and all the things they do. So they're intended to be our guides to bring us closer to Jesus Christ. So again, three simple areas: the liturgy, the Jesus prayer, and going back to the spiritual checks of the church. It's so often I'll hear, I listen to the homilies from Father Mirren and his father almost every week, and they talk about the reading of the fathers and the prayer, two ways of thwarting temptation. Nothing new here. Not a thing. This is nothing new. This is our tradition. What Patriarch Daniel's doing, and what I find so amazing, is he's building the church from the inside out. From the souls of the people. St. John Chrysostom writes at one point in one of his homilies, "Would that the most beautiful part of our churches be the souls of those who are inside." And that's essentially what he's doing. Consider what Jesus said: cleanse the inside of the cup first, so the outside will be pure. They want a deep interior faith and not a superficial one. And that way, we have a house that's built on rock and not sand. Contrast that to what we're seeing in our country and other parts of the world, let's say Western Europe today. What are they trying to do with the church? Modernize it. We need to update Jesus. We know the teachings, he didn't quite mean that when he said that. Trying to update him and make him more appealing. But you know what? Let's face it. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, forever. Who is focused on getting us to heaven? Is it a focus on prayer? Or is it a focus on modernizing Christ? I like to tell people, it's in one of the books, whoever doesn't have your best interest in heart, run. Don't go with them. Now, I do want to say that, so we're not too progressive for prayer and all this. Now, let me talk a little bit about the historical context for Romania. There's a famous saint, I consider him famous, St. Paisios Velichkovsky. Actually, a few years ago, I really only had seen his name. I didn't know anything about the saint. He was born in 722 in Poltava, which is part of modern-day Ukraine. It was part of Little Russia at the time. And he was of a priestly family. He went to the theology school in Kyiv, and he studied for 2 years, and he said, no, I'm drawn to monastic life. Problem with monastic, and he went to the Pechersk Lavra, but the problem with monastic life in Russia at that time is it had been significantly repressed by Peter the Great and Catherine the Great. They really downsized the monasteries, and it wasn't that. And one day, St. Paisios meets a monk who's from Romania, and he said, the hesychast tradition is alive and well in Romania. And so St. Paisios decides to go. Now, Athenite spirituality, which we equate to the hesychast tradition, was already in Romania, came through a monk, Nicodemus of Tismana. He died in 1406. He was a disciple of St. Gregory of Sinai, who is a Philokalic father. His writings are in the Philokalia. And he founded the first two Athenite monasteries in Romania. And further, Romanian royalty had built a number of the monasteries on Mount Athos and had funded them. And the Putna Monastery up in the Bukovina area is one of the largest monasteries built by Romanian King Stephen the Great in 1466. So there was a strong monastic tradition in Romania. So St. Paisios leaves Kyiv in 1743. He goes to Romania. He becomes a disciple of Basil of Poiana Marulia. And it's this elder that teaches him the Jesus prayer. And then 3 years later in 1746, with the blessing of his elder, St. Paisios went to Mount Athos. And he's in looking for a spiritual father. And he looks, and he looks, and he looks. He's practicing the prayer, and he can't find anybody. But he did start hearing about, in fact, he was so well revered that he finally got a monk that said, I would like you to be my elder. And he goes, I won't be your elder because I didn't grow up in the tradition like that. So they were spiritual companions. So they confessed their sins to each other each day, and they were able to grow in that way spiritually. But in this search for the spiritual father, St. Paisios was suddenly hearing about all these texts from the tradition of the Jesus prayer, of the fathers of the church, and he began searching for these texts. And he started collecting them and then translating them. The problem was, they were not easy to find. They were in little hermitages at the bottom of Mount Athos, which is really the rugged side. And another problem was, they were in a Greek that most of the Greek monks didn't read anymore. They didn't understand. So he had to really, it was a chore to translate the Philokalia into Church Slavonic is what he did. Now, he happened to be at Amonathos at a time of the Kolevades movement. And this is a very known movement. And what they did is, we had something probably most people have heard of, the European Enlightenment, that had moved from Western Europe, and it was really catching fire in Russia and Greece, and it was trying to usurp the church as a moral authority. You know, it's reason over faith, human ingenuity. We don't need God in our lives. And that was taking off in really problematic in Russia and Greece. And the Kolevades movement said, we need to do something about it, and we need to double down on our faith. And so three monks, basically, first St. Paisios, and the other two that are more commonly associated with the Philokalia, St. Nicodemus and St. Macarius, collect the books, translate them, but there's actually two collections, the Greek collection, which really didn't have much impact in the church until the 20th century, and here you have St. Paisios in the 18th century. And his Philokalia, his collection, about 80% overlap with the Greek Philokalia. But St. Paisios did not, whereas St. Macarius and St. Nicodemus published their work in 1782, Paisios didn't. He didn't want it to be published. He thought this work needed to be from monks who were under spiritual direction with the guidance of the church. So they did handwritten copies, and they were slowly giving them out. And finally, in 1793, he consented to it being published. A year before he died, first in Church Slavonic, then in Russian, which was first translated by a well-known saint, St. Ignatius Brancheninov, in 1857, and then in a five-volume work by St. Theophon the Recluse in 1876. This is known as the Dobrotolubia. Why do I mention that? Because that Russian pilgrim, if you ever read the story, he's running around with that Philokalia in his pocket, or whatever, in his knapsack. It's that Russian Philokalia that he's running around with, or that from St. Paisios. So anyway, let me go back to St. Paisios for a moment. He goes back to Romania in 1764 because he was asked by Prince Grigori to return to oversee the rebuilding of monasticism in Romania. So he and 64 of his companions left Monathos on a ship, sailed up into the Black Sea to Romania, and they took up residence in a big monastery, Dragomirna, which is a convent today. Later, because the community continued to grow, they expanded to Neamț Monastery, where St. Paisios died in 1794. He had over 700 disciples at that time. And he's buried there in Neamț. And by the way, on the cover of Encounter, that is Neamț Monastery, the liturgy going on there. He had collected the texts, he provided spiritual guidance, and most importantly, they would read the texts. A father, or St. Paisios, started the tradition where they would gather and he would read the text and explain it to the monks. So they became grounded in the text and what they were teaching. And we read in the biography of Elder Ambrose of Optina, this is a grandchild of St. Paisios. And when I mean grandchild, spiritual grandchild. So Paisios' followers started going back to Russia after he died. The repression under Catherine the Great was over. They started going back and establishing centers like Optina, became a very famous spiritual center. And so that disciple, Ambrose was a disciple of one of the disciples of Paisios. So you can see this tradition that just keeps going. And in the biography of Ambrose, it's written, when the Nativity Fast began, all the brethren of the monastery gathered each evening except Sundays and feast days in a refectory. Candles were lit. The elder Ambrose arrived, sat down in his customary place, and began reading his translation of the works of the Holy Fathers, St. Basil the Great, St. John Climacus, Abba Dorotheos, St. Theodore the Studite, or St. Simeon the New Theologian. The brethren listened with attention. Such readings continued all winter until Lazarus Saturday. Reading a book, the elder at the same time interpreted it, bringing forth testimony from the Holy Scriptures and from the Holy and New, from the Old and New Testaments and from the teachings of the Holy Fathers of the Church. He had such a gift that by his words he could animate the most despondent, console the most sorrowful, and awaken in each of them zeal for salvation. Thus the monastery became in truth a school of spiritual life, where by word and deed the brethren were instructed in the rules of Christian asceticism. If this sounds familiar, those of you who know Father David Abernathy, that's what he's doing. He had Theophan the Recluse reading a book and going through and explaining it. He's not doing anything new. He's doing what Paisios was doing in the 18th century, which led to an amazing renaissance in Russia. All these spiritual fathers, Ignatius Branchaninov, Serafim of Serov, Theophan the Recluse, they all came and have that result from the fire that St. Paisios lit. So you can see, and I know Father Mirren wants to start a book study too, or a, what we call a formation class, but that is what the fathers did almost 300 years ago. And as St. Paisios himself wrote, if you depart from heeding and reading the patristic books, you'll fall away from the peace and love of Christ. That is, from the fulfilling of Christ's commandments. And there will enter into your midst rebellion, tumult, and disorder, disturbance of soul, wavering and hopelessness, murmuring against and judgment of each other. And because of the increase of these, the love of many will grow cold, or rather, that of almost all. And if such will be, this community will also be dissolved, first in soul, and with time and body also. So he stresses the importance of the church fathers, which is what Patriarch Daniel's doing today. And if you look at the world today, the way Paisios is describing it, yep, we see exactly that. Hopelessness, growing cold, tumult, judging people, all this stuff. The idea of reading the text is it gives us spiritual guidance of how to live a life in conformity with the commandments of Jesus Christ. As Jesus said, if anybody wishes to come after me, must deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me, and do this in daily practice. The Holy Fathers, the Philokalic Fathers, are the ones that give us their wisdom of how to do that. So I said, after Paisios died, his disciples, a number went back to Russia, many had been Russian, and now you have this big Philokalic renewal. And you have a spiritual renaissance in Russia that lasted over 100 years. It was sort of, even the Communist Revolution, Optina was shut down in 1923, but it was hard to root out the faith from Russia after that spiritual renaissance. These are the people, the lay people, that went to the monasteries for spiritual direction to the Holy Fathers of the monastery. So there's a few common themes about spiritual guides at that time. They never had their own opinion. They always cited the church fathers and sacred scripture. So the texts for us remain important, especially in the absence of spiritual guides. Father Cyprian mentioned to me the Russian pilgrim, and as I said, this is a piece of work that came during that time. Now, let's jump up to the contemporary Romanian experience. I mentioned Elder Cleopa, who died in 1998. As a young man and as a young monk, he was a shepherd, and he would sit on the hills watching the sheep, and he'd always borrow a book from the library, from the monastery, of the church fathers. How did he get so grounded as a young boy? He was reading the church fathers, sitting on the hill watching sheep. He'd just borrow books. And he always immersed himself in the texts. And he would always, if we read his writings, he was always quoting from the church fathers. Now, there are a few other things that are unique to Romanian spirituality. Under the communist re-education, when so many people were cast in the prison for faith, it was funny how many of the prisons actually had access to Philokalic writings. They would seek, the prisoners would seek a spiritual father if they could, because usually there's a priest in jail somewhere. They became adept at ascetical practices. They treated the prison cells as their own little hermitage. And there are stories about the saints of the ascetics of the Eyud prison. One of them, well-known, is a great book on him, Valerio Gafencu, is called The Saint of the Prisons, also the name of the book. He encouraged his fellow prisoners with a constant focus on purification and renewal, his sacrificial love, his constant struggle. He attained significant spiritual heights. He's not a monk. He's a lay person. And he died in Targo Okna, bedridden with tuberculosis in a ward for terminally ill. He offered up his sufferings and encouraged many, thereby earning the title of confessor. a confessor of the faith, a layperson, grounded in the Philokalic tradition. Also, in 1945, there was a movement in Bucharest that began the Burning Bush Movement. It was priests, bishops, monks gathering together to renew the Philokalic tradition, the hesychast prayer tradition, from 1945 to 1958. Father Dimitris Stanilowy was a member of that group, and there's a number of the monks too, like Arsenia Posiak. At that time, also, Stanilowy started translating the Philokalia into Romanian, and today it's a 12-volume series. Although it's not in English. That translation is not in English. The Russian one is, the Greek one is. Although I found somebody that's translated about 5 texts. I have electronic copies that I sent to Father David of some of the Romanian text. Anyway, the Philokalia fueled a spiritual renewal in Romania as well. And this was the golden age. How many of you, by the way, watched the movie about St. Nectarius called Man of God? Anybody see it? One. You got to see it. You can rent it on Amazon for a couple bucks. It's a really good movie. I mentioned at the beginning Radu Voda Monastery. There are so many monasteries that have a deep love for St. Nectarius. He's a Greek saint. And Putna has a big set of relics, and so does the Radu Voda Monastery. And people, like I said, at least 300, maybe 500 people in line to venerate the relics on a given day. And there's another story the Romanians know very well. It started circulating in the 60s. So they had a village, had no priest. And they kept going to the bishop and saying, please send us a priest. And the bishop says, I don't have anybody. And they begged and begged and begged. And one day they thought their prayers were answered because a priest showed up. Who are you? I'm the priest you asked for. So he went to all the tombstones and read the funeral rites. He conducted all the marriages. He held liturgy, made sure people had received Eucharist, and then said he was done and left. So the people were grateful. So they went back to the bishop and said, thank you for bringing us a priest. Could you send another? And the bishop is confounded. He goes, I didn't send you a priest. I never had one. You go, but there was a priest. Who was he? Nobody knew his name. Well, surely he filled out the parish records for the funerals and the baptisms and everything. Yes, he did. So the bishop summoned the records, all filled out in Romanian, except the signature. It was in Greek, and none of the people could read it, except the bishop could. Nectarios, bishop of Pentapolis. St. Nectarios had come to the people. Now, he died in 1929, so it's not, he came as a saint. He's a saint of the Orthodox Church. Romania is truly a holy country. Truly, truly, truly. Now, the lessons for today. The principles of spiritual renewal are pretty simple. Liturgy, Jesus prayer, philokalic renewal. Going back to the church fathers. It's doubling down on our own tradition that we share with the Romanians. We don't have to be Romanian. This is our tradition as well. This is, if you listen to Father Mir, now when you listen to him talk about the Holy Fathers, now you know why. It's doubling down on what the tradition is all about. This is what I think we need desperately in our world today. Now think about it. These writings are far more accessible than they were at the time of St. Paisios. We actually have them in books, not manuscripts and things like that. And as one Optina elder wrote, if we pay careful attention to these writings as if they were to the fathers themselves, by reading them with fear of God's understanding and with God's help, we can become imitators of the God-pleasing life. Now, many of you made a commencement or graduation speech that was given by Admiral, I got to get his name right, William McRaven at the University of Texas. He said, if you want to change the world, make your bed. Remember that speech? I would say as a Christian, you want to change the world? Pray. Pray the Jesus prayer. It's hard. tired. It gets tired. I'm distracted. I don't feel like getting up. All these reasons the devil wants us not to pray. But if we pray, it's a but God wants us to try. He wants perfection. He wants effort. If we Christians want to change the world, pray. And this is what I've seen in the Basilica News Agency, constantly talking about the need for prayer. Everybody needs prayer. Message. Want to change the world? Prayer. Pick one. Now, how do you pick one? Well, I think I'm crazy, but some of the books I write, I always put a bunch of footnotes in there. And why I put those in there is because when I read other books, I would say, oh, this is interesting. I'd look at what father it was, and I'd go get that book. And I try different ones, and then you fall in love with a few. I love, for example, St. Paisios of Monathos. Not a different Paisios. Six volumes. Go pick one. Read one. Okay, so really get to know the writings of the fathers. Next, come to the liturgy to pray it intensely. Remember what Patriarch Daniel said. This liturgy is meant to be a profound, dramatic encounter with Christ in the Eucharist. Be ready. Maybe say the prayers before Holy Communion the night before, before coming to liturgy. Maybe look at the reading. But come ready to pray. This is the divine encounter. This is what's so important. Prayer makes it personal, and then we come together as community. So if we start with those three focus areas, and you know what? We know it works. We can see what's happening in Romania. Why wouldn't it work for us? It will work. I do believe it. So what did I personally learn about Romania? It is a very holy place. The great fathers with incredible wisdom and holiness and clairvoyance that we read about in the tradition from 300 years ago, 500 years ago, they exist. I truly believe they do. I've met them. Father Cyprian was one of them. Father David was also an amazing holy father. And I felt drawn back to go back a second time as a pilgrim. And truth be told, I'm holding a ticket to go back next May because I really want to see more and experience more. Now, somebody asked me, do I want to be Romanian? I said, no, I don't think so. I don't think it's a matter about being Romanian or Slovak or me, German. It's not about that. But what I did learn is what kind of Christian I want to be. I would like to be. I want to be filled with the spiritual zeal of those people. I want my heart on fire with love for Jesus Christ. I want to be completely dependent on God like they are and what they had to learn through the communist era. I wanted to be directed by the counsels of the Holy Fathers. I know the type of people I want to be surrounded with in the church. I want people that also believe the same way. And that's the church I'm willing to help work for, to make that a reality. It's one that's focused first and foremost on the interior life. Thank you very much.